Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast, bringing the leadership thinking, beliefs, philosophies, and practices behind punky, startup-y, next-stage businesses to you, even if your company's not quite there yet. Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of the Punks in Suits podcast. I hope you are very well. I want to tell you firstly about our new newsletter. So I mentioned just before the summer that I was going to try and master the technology around being able to send newsletters, and I've done that now pretty much, I think. So if you sign up to the newsletter from this point on, you will get a free 5-part article series all about busting the myths of leadership. It's the 5 key themes that I repeat over and over again in these podcasts that I talk about in my speeches. And it's a really nice freebie for anyone who signs up to the newsletter. So you get one article per week for 5 weeks as a kind of welcome to the newsletter. The newsletter itself isn't going to be weekly, I can't promise that. But what I will do is whenever I publish a newsletter, I will add notes from the previous few podcasts since the last time I published a newsletter. And what that means is, if, like most people, you're listening to the podcast on the move and you're not able to sit down and make notes as you listen, this newsletter will be a kind of summary notes, a sort of Cliff's notes of the podcast. So you've got everything you need, the resources and some of the highlights from the previous few weeks' episodes. It'll also have in it 1 or 2 provocative questions. Questions for you to ask yourself about your work, about your leadership, about yourself, about the extent to which you are integrating your whole life, something I talked about last week. Whatever the kind of themes are that are coming up quite frequently in my work with clients, I will pose those same questions to you. So go to the website if you haven't already. It's www.thatpeoplething.com. And on all the pages, if you scroll down, there is the opportunity to subscribe. Do that and you'll get this free 5-part series, which you can use any way you can like. You can share with clients, you can share with colleagues and friends, you can just keep it to yourself and give yourself a bit of an edge, though that seems a little bit selfish, whatever you like. And of course, you can respond to me and let me know what you think. So that's the first piece of news. Second thing is the subject of our podcast today. And it's really posing a very big question, but with a particular angle. And the question is, why do we work? This is something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and it's a question that we hardly ever ask. We really take for granted that we will work, that we will try to get ahead in our work, whatever that means, and that we'll do that until we're about 65, or maybe these days longer, and then we'll stop and we'll do something else. We'll, inverted commas, retire, and that means something different to the period of our lives when we were, inverted commas, working. Historically, of course, that isn't where work fits into our lives. It isn't a period of time between certain ages before which we're in education and after which we stop working. Work has always been a part of people's lives. It's always been integrated into their lives. So if you think about hunter-gatherers, I don't think they really made the differentiation between working and not working. They were just living their lives and it involved doing a whole variety of activities. And although we don't live in hunter-gatherer times today, of course, we are still built the same way, pretty much. We're certainly built the same way as we have been built for the last few thousand years, when work and the rest of our lives have been much more integrated. So this differentiation between our working lives and our lives outside has not been there historically. But it is there now. And I think it's worth us asking the question, why do we work? Because we will get some pretty interesting answers. Now, the obvious reason, of course, that we work is for money. We need to get our very basic needs met, and work can help with that. And then, if we do well, if we're successful, and you can read inverted commas into pretty much anything I'm saying at this point, if we are successful, then we can meet our material wants. So not so much our needs, but our wants to have a bigger house or a nicer house or live in a different part of the country or to shop in fancy shops or wear different clothes. Money is an enabler for the stuff we like to do and that we think is important outside of work. So working enables us to have a life outside of work that we desire or that we aspire to. The second reason we work is to be good at something. Many people find just the joy of doing something that you're good at hugely motivational. And in fact, the granddaddy of motivation theory, a guy called Frederick Hertzberg, who was writing, I think back in the 50s or 60s, something like that, he studied intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. So extrinsic being external, like money as a motivator, and intrinsic being coming from within you. And the joy of actually doing the job was one of the very few intrinsic motivators. Others are the opportunity for advancement, praise and recognition, acknowledgement. There's a very small number of intrinsic motivators, and being good at the job itself is one of them. And then there's we work to get ahead. We're on a career path and we're rising up the career ladder. And this getting ahead thing is starting to be troublesome for me. There's nothing wrong with getting better at something, challenging yourself, making more of an impact, desiring to make more of an impact. There's nothing wrong with getting recognition for that added value in terms of more money or more respect or more influence in the organization. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's every reason to think that as we spend more and more time doing the thing that we love to do, we will have more value and we will be able to have more impact than when we were first starting out. But at what cost? It's easy to lose sight of where work fits in our lives as a whole. And I see too many people sacrificing what work is intended to enable. The freedom to travel, to relax, to have fun, to have a rich and varied life, and to do a job you actually really like in order to get ahead. Get ahead kind of trumps everything else in your life and in your work. I've said before that salary and status end up becoming not recognition for added value, but compensation for sacrifices you've made and your willingness to make more. And we put up with situations that are bad for us because our focus is on managing our career. That's what takes our attention. Now, it's often thought that it's easier to get out of that trap if you're a freelance or if you're a consultant like me or if you do interim work. But actually, the only difference is mindset. The attachment that you give to needing your employer to continue to work with you. And what freelancers and consultants and interims have learned to do is to make that disconnect between the work they're doing and the need to continue to do it with that particular employer. So they have this mindset that says, well, look, I'm here to do a particular job with you, but I know it's not permanent. I know I will be judged on my contribution, on my ability to actually get the deliverables that you've asked me to deliver. I know it's not long term. And therefore, I know that I'm not reliant on you for the next 10, 20, 30 years for my career, so I don't have that same level of attachment as if I was in the mindset that says, gosh, I hope these people continue to want to employ me for the next 10, 20 years. Even if I decide to leave, I hope they don't decide that I should leave. So I want them to be loyal to me. I'm not necessarily going to be loyal to them. But this is a mindset, this freelance or interim or consultant mindset, is a mindset that you could bring into the workplace as a full-time employee. I was talking to someone recently who is a freelancer, and she was saying that being a freelance made her feel extra pressure to be of value. Every day they were paying her, she felt an obligation to deliver value. Why don't we always feel that, even when we work full-time? We take the salary, and we manage our careers, which is not very fulfilling. And we operate basically from a fear-based perspective. Please don't fire me. Please don't get between me and my security. And that is the mindset that we bring, in contrast to the mindset of this friend of mine, the freelancer, who says she's not bringing that. She's bringing a mindset that is, I'm here to do a job. I know that I will only be here as long as I can be of value. And I also know that when this contract is finished, I'll look for something somewhere else. I'm not loyal to you, but I'm not expecting you to be loyal to me. Now, if you are operating currently from this fear-based perspective, and it might be a low-level fear, I'm not saying you wake up every morning very, very desperately attached to, God, I hope they don't fire me today. But at some level, when you manage your career and you manage your reputation in an organization, often one of the things that is driving that is to make sure that the company need you and that you have a job and that they continue to be loyal towards you. It's a basic fundamental need for safety and security. And I hear you. I have lived for 17 years with the possibility that I might go out of business. And there have certainly been many, many, countless sleepless nights when I've worried about that. But then I've thought to myself, well, and then what? You know, if I go out of business, what does that mean? I have no fallback. It's not like anyone would hire me at this point. So going out of business in a permanent way isn't an option. It just isn't an option. There is a scenario where I have no money. That's an option. But somehow the business would still have to be there. Having no money and having no clients would be part of a cycle that my business would go through until I worked out what I was going to do next. It would be a temporary part of the cycle. And it is the same when you work full-time for a company too. When you're in full-time employment, that is part of the cycle. But if you choose to see it as a temporary part of the cycle, you also acknowledge that if you're going to stand up for your values, or if you're going to go and find work that really feeds your soul, or if you're going to stake your reputation on something in your business, if you're really going to put yourself into it fully, have what, you know, the cliche, skin in the game, you also know that this is a temporary part of the cycle. There might be consequences to that that mean that you no longer have a job, or that your job is downgraded, or that you are not given as much praise and recognition as you had been when you were playing by the rules of the game. And when you let go of let go of the need to be needed by your company, let go of the need to be secure, then you are much more peaceful. You're able to connect with what really matters about work, what work enables outside of work and keeping that precious, and what work enables inside of work and holding true to that. Now, there's another reason that it often matters to people that they get ahead, and that is the ego. It's about other people seeing you in a particular way. What will other people think if you step away from getting ahead? What will they think if you downsize in your 40s? Or if you sell your car to buy a cheaper one? Or if you take a job that has more meaning but less status in the business? I realized how hard I was holding on to this ego attachment to always be getting bigger and better about 18 months ago when the diary was looking rather quiet. And I realized that I might have to downsize the way that we were living temporarily. It might come to that. And what I noticed was I didn't mind downsizing if it was a choice to downsize for philosophical reasons or environmental reasons, basically high-minded reasons which other people would admire. But I did mind if I had to do it because I couldn't afford my lifestyle. And I realized that was ridiculous. So it's bad enough to have no business in the diary or very little business in the diary. But it's even worse if you then beat yourself up for having no business in the diary, because you should have business in the diary. Because after 17 years, I should have a thriving business. Because it's okay to have a dip if you've just started, but not when you've been going for nearly 20 years. It's okay to have a dip when it's a recession, but not when the economy is good. The business must always grow. It must always be becoming bigger and more stable. And I failed if I have a quiet month or even a quiet year. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. If I would make the choice to downsize because I'm fed up of having so much stuff and of living such a material life, I should have no problem with downsizing because it makes sense financially. The only difference is how it would seem to others and how my ego would judge my success in other people's eyes or in the eyes of society. It's all ego stuff. It's what I should do, how life should be, what others will think. And frankly, that's none of your business. What other people think of the choices that you're making is not your business. What other people think of your choices is their business. Your business is what matters to you. What gives you joy? What are your values? What's going to bring you peace or a thrill in life or challenge or meaning or enable you to pursue your interests outside of work? What assumptions do you need to rethink? Is career always an upward trajectory? Can you take breaks? Do your kids really need to go to that fancy school? Do you actually have to work flat out until you're 65 and then stop? In order to start to reassess why you work, you have to look at all the beliefs and tensions that keep you stuck in working the way that you're working now. As you know, I recently let go of a few of these beliefs and assumptions myself. I took my daughter out of school to homeschool her because I thought, well, maybe there's another way. I know this is what most people do. Most people get up in the morning, get their kids ready for school, get their kids out of the door, sit down, go to the work, whatever it is, go to their office or go upstairs in my case, do a day's work free of interruption. And then their kids come home and then it's family time with a few interruptions to check your email. I know that's what most people do, but I thought to myself, maybe there's another way. I started doing more one-to-one work and fewer massive projects, even though my ego loves the massive projects, loves the rolling out a big change program across a whole organization using a massive team of people and me being the boss of that team. But actually, why do I work? And what's the work that's really going to gel, integrate with the rest of my life? And that seemed to be more one-on-one work and more work with teams long-term over a period of time, the kind of sustainability of that work. It does require less ego. You're not running as big a business, but in exchange, you get simplicity. I've slowed down on the small holding plans and prioritised travel instead. You can't travel so easily when you have a herd of alpacas. So even though I said I'm going to do the small holding thing in the next 18 months, I am still going to do it. It's absolutely in the plan, but probably not in the next, certainly 12 months and maybe longer, because having the freedom to travel, particularly with my daughter out of school, and keeping things nice and simple for a while, that is working better than keeping a promise to podcast listeners and a variety of my friends. I'm renting a house rather than buying, even though renting is seen as a second best option to buying, but it makes sense for us at the moment. So these are some of the things that I'm letting go of, and I can't overemphasize how attached I was to the opposites. So really, really attached to my daughter staying in that school and me being able to pay for it. It was my only priority for 2 years. How can I continue to pay for her to go to school? Nothing else matters as long as she can stay in this school. And I let go of it. I let go of the small holding, even though I have made this statement out in the podcast. I haven't completely let go of it. It's definitely going to happen. Just not in the time scale that I had specified. I've let go of owning my own house. I'm living in a rented house now, and I'll probably live in a rented house next. I was very attached to some of these beliefs and assumptions that were keeping me trapped. And when you let go of those assumptions that you put on yourself by imaginary people who may or may not have those opinions of you, and anyway, who cares even if they do, it means that we can let go of living life on other people's terms. Which brings me back to this question of why we work. Why do you work? Why do you currently work? and what is the role you would like work to play in your life? If you're feeling trapped, if you're feeling that you're lacking in options, that you have to tolerate a situation that really is killing you bit by bit from the inside, ask yourself, what are the barriers that you've created, the musts, the shoulds, the shouldn'ts, that keep you stuck? Other people are living in other ways. It can be done. There is no reason why you can't. And as we see more of this, the Gen Ys operate much more in this way. The I generation think much more like this. The workplace will have to adapt. People will have the option to work for more than compensation for sacrifices, and to find work that plays a balanced role with the rest of everything that they do in their lives. These are people who are seeking integration. All the different pieces balance each other out. Nothing dominates, nothing suffocates anything else. As leaders, I say this over and over again, we have to go first. The whole time that you are holding yourself to this very restrained, constrained way of working, you are basically saying, this is the way it has to be. Others are looking at the way you work and the sacrifices that you're making, and they either think, I'll never make those sacrifices, I'll never do what that guy has done, which clearly will undermine their trust and respect in you. Or they'll look at that and think that's the only way it can be, and they will follow in your footsteps and make the same sacrifices in exchange for monetary and status compensation as you have. So if you want to change that for other people, you need to start by changing it for yourself. I would love to hear where your thinking takes you with this. It can be uncomfortable as you face up to the prison walls that you have yourself put up in collusion with society. But ultimately, you realise that you put them up and you can take them down. So please do get in touch with your stories and your ideas. As I said at the start of this podcast, we now have a newsletter series, so please do go and sign up for the newsletter and let me know what you think about this series. And I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. I've really enjoyed talking about this and thinking about this week and putting my ideas together. And I'm already starting to think of some other things I can do to make work integrate better with my life. And I'll keep you up to date with those. And as I've said, I'd love to hear your experiences too. And in order to do that, you need to know how to stay in touch with me. So here's the lovely Ivy with information about how you can stay in touch, share your stories, and find out more about my work.
How integrated is your life? Does one part of your, let's say, work suffocate other parts of your life? What price are you paying in terms of your mental health, stress, sleepless nights, family life, hobbies, friends, or just a sense of living life on your own terms? No amount of therapy, coaching, or meditation can bring you a sense of peace. If your life is out of whack, and when your life is out of whack, how can you lead? How can you operate to the peak of your performance? And how can you promote the health of your workforce or the health of your customer base when you sacrifice your own sense of peace? We'd love to hear from you, especially if today's podcast has inspired you. You can also stay in touch with us on Twitter at Blair Palmer, Instagram at Blair Leeds Palmer, or by email blair@thatpeoplething.com. And don't forget to rate or review this podcast on iTunes. It will help other people to find us and share these ideas. We would really, 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 really appreciate you doing that. Now, please, I'm begging you on my hands and knees, I'm really begging you. Please. Bye.